Vimes woke up in darkness. He blinked and touched his eyes to make sure that they were open. Then he sat up, and his head thumped against stone, and then there was light, vicious yellow and purple lights, filling his life very suddenly. He lay back until they went away. He took a personal itinerary. His cloak, helmet, sword and armour had all gone. He was left in his shirt and breeches, and while this place was not freezing, it had a clamminess that was already working its way through to his bones. Right. He wasn't sure how long it took him to get a feel for the cell, but a feel it was. He moved by inches, waving his arms ahead of him like a man practicing a very slow martial art against the darkness. Even then the senses became unreliable in the total black. He followed the wall carefully, followed another wall, followed a wall which yielded under his fingertips the outline of a small door with a handle, and found the wall which had the stone slab against it on which he'd awoken. What made this all the harder was having to do it with his head sunk against his chest. Vimes wasn't a very tall man. If he had been, he'd probably have cracked his skull when he woke up. Without any other aids to rely on, he walked the length of the walls using his copper's pace. He knew exactly how long it took him, swinging his legs easily, to walk across the brass bridge back home. A little bit of muzzy mental arithmetic was needed, but eventually he decided the room was 10 feet square. One thing that Vimes did not do was to shout, "Help, help!" He was in the cell. Someone had put him in a cell. It was reasonable to assume, therefore, that whoever had done this was not interested in his opinions. He groped his way to the stone slab again and lay down. As he did so, something rattled. He patted his pockets and brought out what felt and sounded very much like a box of matches. There were only three left. So, resources. The clothes he stood up in and a few matches. Now to work out what the hell was going on. He remembered seeing the chandelier. He thought he remembered seeing detritus actually catch the thing. And there had been a lot of screaming and shouting and running around, while in his arms the king had sworn at Vimes as only a dwarf could swear. Then someone had hit him. There was also an ache across his back where an axe had been turned aside by his armour. He felt a twitch of national pride at the thought. Ankh Morpork armour had stood up to the blow. Admittedly, it was probably made in Ankh Morpork by dwarfs from Uberwald, using steel smelted from Uberwald iron, but it damn well was Ankh Morpork armour just the same. There was a pillow on the slab, made in Uberwald. As Vimes turned his head, the pillow went, very faintly, clink. This was a sound he didn't associate with feathers. In the darkness he picked up the sack, and after resorting to his teeth, managed to rip a hole in the heavy material. If what he drew out had ever been part of a bird, it wasn't one Vimes would like to meet. It felt very much like Inigo's one shot. A finger inserted very gingerly into the end told Vimes that it was loaded, too. Just one shot, he remembered, but it was one people didn't know you had. On the other hand, the tooth fairy probably wasn't responsible for putting it in the pillow, unless she'd been having to face some particularly difficult children lately. He slipped it back into the bag when he became aware of a light. It was the faintest glow, showing that the door contained a barred window and that there were shadowy figures on the other side of it. "Are you awake, your grace? This is very unfortunate."
"Dee?"
"Yes."
"And you've come to tell me that this has all been some terrible mistake?"
"Alas, no. I am convinced of your innocence, of course."
"Really? Me too," growled Vimes. "In fact, I'm so convinced of my innocence, I don't even know what it is I'm innocent of. Let me out, or—"
"Or you will stay in, I'm afraid," said Dee. "It is a very strong door. You are not in Ankh Morpork, your grace. I will, of course, communicate your predicament to your Lord Veterinary as soon as possible, but I understand that the message tower has been badly damaged."
"My predicament is that you've locked me up. Why? I saved your king, didn't I?"
"There is conflict.
Someone let that chandelier down."
"Yes, indeed, a member of your staff, it appears."
"You know that can't be true. Detritus and Little Bottom were with me when—"
"Mr. Skimmer was on your staff."
"He—" "Yes, but he wouldn't—"
"I believe you have such a thing in Ankh Morpork as the Guild of Assassins,"
said Dee calmly. "Correct me if I'm wrong. He was up at the tower.
The damaged tower?
It was damaged before he..." Vimes stopped. "Why would he smash up one of the towers?"
"I did not say he would," said Dee. The flat calm was still there. "And then, Your Grace, it has been suggested that you gave a signal just before the thing came down."
"What?"
"A hand to the cheek or something. It has been suggested that you anticipated the event.
The thing was swaying. Look, let me talk to Skimmer."
"Do you have supernatural powers, Your Grace?"
Vimes hesitated.
"He's dead."
"We believe he became entangled in the winch mechanism in the process of releasing the chandelier. Three dwarfs were dead around him."
"He wouldn't..."
Vimes stopped again. "Of course he wouldn't. It's just that he's a member of this guild we have, and you certainly know that, don't you?" Dee must have seen his expression.
"Quite so, quite so. Everything will be investigated thoroughly. The innocent have nothing to fear."
The news that they have nothing to fear is guaranteed to strike terror into the hearts of innocents everywhere.
"What have you done with Sybil?"
"Done, Your Grace? Why, nothing. We are not barbarians. We have heard nothing but good reports of your wife. She is upset, of course."
Vimes groaned.
"And Atreus and Littlebottom?"
"Well, of course, they were under your command, Your Grace, and one is a troll and the other is dangerously different, and that is why, and precisely for that reason, they are under house arrest in your own embassy. We do respect the traditions of diplomacy, and we will not have it said that we have acted out of malice."
Dee sighed.
"And then, of course, there is the other matter.
Are you going to accuse me of stealing the scone, too?"
"You laid hands on the king."
Vimes stared.
"Huh? A ton of candlestick was about to fall on him."
"This has been pointed out.
And I'm imprisoned for saving him from an assassination attempt I planned."
"Are you?"
"No! Look, the thing was coming down. What else should I have done? Tugged at the carpet and tried to drag him away?"
"Yes, yes, I understand, but precedent in this area is very clear. In 1345, when the king at the time fell into a lake, not one member of his staff dared touch him because of the ruling, and the subsequent finding was that they had acted correctly. It is forbidden to touch the king. I have, of course, explained to the conclave that this is not the Ankh-Morpork way, but this is not Ankh-Morpork."
"I don't need everyone reminding me about that."
"You will remain our guest while investigations continue. Food and drink will be brought to you."
"And light?"
"Of course. Excuse our lack of consideration. Stand back from the door, please. The guards with me are armed, and they are uncomplicated people."
The grill on the door was swung back. A glowing cage was put on the ledge.
"What's this? A sick glowworm?"
"It is a kind of beetle, yes. You'll find that it will very soon seem quite bright. We are very accustomed to darkness."
"Look," said Vimes as the grill was shut again. "You know this is ridiculous. I don't know what the position is with Mr. Skimmer, but I damn well intend to find out. And there's the scone theft. I'm pretty certain I'm close to working that out, too. If you let me return to the embassy, where else could I go?"
"We would not wish to find out. You may just feel that life would be more pleasant in Ankh-Morpork."
"Really? And how would we get there?"
"You may have friends in unexpected places."
Vimes thought of the evil little weapon in the pillow.
"You will not be badly treated. This is our way," said Dee. "I will return when I have news."
"Hey!"
But Dee was a retreating shape in the crepuscular, almost not there light. In Vimes's cell the glow beetle was doing its best. All it managed to achieve, though, was to turn the darkness into a variety of green shadows. You could find your way around without walking into the walls, but that was about the extent of it. One shot, which they didn't know you had. That'd probably get him out of the door, into a corridor, underground, full of dwarfs. On the other hand, it was amazing how the evidence could stack up against you and people wanted it to. Anyway, Vimes was an ambassador. What had happened to diplomatic immunity? but that was hard to argue when you were faced with uncomplicated people with weaponry. There was a risk that they'd experiment to see if it was true. One shot they didn't expect. Sometime later, there was a rattling of keys and the door was pulled open. Vimes could make out the shape of two dwarfs. One was holding an axe, the other was bearing a tray. The dwarf with the axe motioned Vimes to step back. An axe wasn't a good idea, Vimes considered. It was always the weapon of choice amongst dwarfs, but it wasn't sensible in a confined space. He raised his hands, and as the other dwarf walked cautiously over to the stone slab, let them move towards the back of his neck. These dwarfs were nervous of him. Perhaps they didn't see humans very often. They'd remember this one.
"Want to see a trick?" said Vimes.
"Grzdak!"
"Watch this," said Vimes, and brought his hands around and shut his eyes just before the match flared.
He heard the axe drop as its owner tried to cover his face. That was an unexpected bonus, but there wasn't time to thank the god of desperate men. Vimes plunged forward, kicked as hard as he could, and heard an oof of expelled breath. Then he leapt into the patch of darkness that contained the other dwarf, found a head, spun round, and rammed it into an unseen wall. The first dwarf was trying to get to his feet. Vimes fumbled for him in the gloom, pulled him up by his jerkin and rasped,
"Somebody left me a weapon. They wanted me to kill you. Remember that. I could have killed you."
He punched the dwarf in the stomach. This was no time to play by the Marquis of Fantaylor rules. The Marquis of Fantaylor got into many fights in his youth, most of them as a result of being known as the Marquis of Fantaylor, and wrote a set of rules for what he termed the noble art of fisticuffs, which mostly consisted of a list of places where people weren't allowed to hit him. Many people were impressed with his work, and later stood with noble chest outthrust and fists balled in a spirit of manly aggression against people who hadn't read the Marquis's book, but did know how to knock people senseless with a chair. The last words of a surprisingly large number of people were, "Stuff the bloody Marquis of Fantaylor!" Then he turned, snatched the little cage containing the light beetle, and headed for the door. There was a feeling of passageway stretching off in both directions. Vimes paused for just long enough to sense the draft on his face and headed that way. Another glow beetle was hanging in a cage a little distance off. It illuminated, if such a bright word could be used for a light that merely made the darkness less black, a huge circular opening in which a fan turned lazily. The blades were so slow that Vimes was able to step between them into the velvet cavern beyond. "Someone really wants me dead," he thought, as he inched his way along the nearest invisible wall with his face to the draft. One shot they weren't expecting, but someone was expecting it, weren't they? If you want to get a prisoner out of the clink, then you give him a key or a file. You don't give him a weapon. A key might get him out. A weapon would get him killed. He stopped, one foot over emptiness. The glow beetle revealed a hole in the floor. It had the huge suckingness of depth. Then he gripped the beetle's cage between his teeth, took a few steps back, and completely misjudged the distance. He hit the other side of the hole with every rib, both arms flat on the floor beyond. A bit of Ankh-Morpork's sense of humour hissed between his teeth. He scrabbled his way onto the cave floor and got his breath back. Then he took the one shot out of his pocket, fired it into the floor, tossed it into the hole. It clattered and echoed for some time, and moved on, keeping his face towards the cold air. This wasn't a tunnel any more. It was the bottom of a shaft, but the green glow lit up something heaped in the middle. Vimes picked up a handful of snow, and when he looked up, a flake melted on his face. He grinned in the dark. The beetle light just caught the edge of the spiral stairs fixed to the rock. Stairs turned out to be a generous description. When the shaft had been cut, the dwarfs had made holes in the stone and hammered thick bulks of timber into them. He tried one or two. They seemed sturdy enough. With care, he'd be able to scramble. He was a long way up before one log snapped. He flung out his hands and caught the next one, his grip slipping on the wet wood. The glow beetle disappeared downwards, and Vimes, swinging back and forth from his precarious handhold, watched the circle of dim green light dwindle to a dot and vanish. Then the realization crept over him that there was no way he would be able to pull himself up. His fingers were numb, but the rest of his entire life consisted of the amount of time they could maintain a grip on the clammy step above him. Call it a minute, perhaps. There are a lot of things that could profitably be done in a minute, but most of them couldn't be done with no hands while hanging in darkness over a long drop. He lost his grip. A moment later he smacked into the spiral of logs one turn below, which parted company with the wall. Man and timber fell one more turn. Vimes landed with a rib-bending thump across one step, while those around it gave way. Rocking gently on the one tough log, he listened to the thuds and booms as the fallen timber continued to the bottom of the shaft. Vimes had intended to swear, but the fall had knocked the breath out of him. He hung like a folded pair of old trousers. It had been a long time since he'd slept. Whatever he'd been doing on the slab, it hadn't been sleep. Normal sleep didn't leave your mouth feeling as though glue had been poured into it. And only this morning the new ambassador for Ankh-Morpork had strolled out to present his credentials. Only this evening Ankh-Morpork's commander of police had set out to solve a simple little theft, and now he was dangling halfway up a freezing shaft with a few inches of old and unreliable wood between him and a brief trip to the next world. All he could hope for was that his whole life wasn't going to pass before his eyes. There were some bits of it he didn't want to remember. "Ah, Sir Samuel, bad luck, you are doing so well!" He opened his eyes. A faint purple light just above him illuminated the form of the Lady Margalotta. She was sitting on empty space. "Can I give you a lift?" she said. Vimes shook his head muzzily. "If it makes you feel any better, I really don't like doing this," said the vampire. "It's so expected of one. Oh, dear, that rotten old log doesn't look very—" The log snapped. Vimes landed spread-eagled on the turn below, but only for a moment. Several stairs broke and dropped him a further flight. This time he caught hold of one and was once again dangling. Lady Margalotta descended regally. Far below, the broken wood boomed. "Now, in theory, this might be an almost survivable way of getting back down," said the vampire. "Unfortunately, I fear that the descending logs have smashed many of the ones below." Vimes shifted. His handhold seemed secure. It might just be possible to pull himself up. "I knew you were behind this," he muttered, trying to will some life into his shoulder muscles. "No, you didn't. You knew that the scone wasn't stolen, though." Vimes stared at the serenely floating shape. "The dwarfs wouldn't think that," he began. The log under him gave the little nasty movement that announces to any luckless passengers that it is about to land. Lady Margalotta drifted closer. "I know you hate vampires," she said. "It's quite usual for your personality type. It's the penetrative aspect. But if I was you right now, I'd ask myself, do I hate them with all my life?" She held out a hand. "Just one bite will end all my troubles, eh?" Vimes snarled. "One bite would be one too many, Sam Vimes." The wood cracked. She grabbed his wrist. If he'd thought about it at all, Vimes would have expected to be dangling from a vampire now. Instead, he was simply floating. "Don't think of letting go," said Margalotta as they rose gently up the shaft. "One bite would be one too many," said Vimes. He recognized the mangled mantra. "You're a teetotaler?"
"Almost 4 years now."
"No blood at all?"
"Oh yes, animal. It's rather kinder to them than slaughter, don't you think? Of course, it makes them docile, but frankly, a cow is unlikely ever to win the Thinker of the Year award. I'm on a wagon, Mr. Vimes."
"The wagon. We call it the wagon," said Vimes weakly. "And that replaces human blood?"
"Like lemonade replaces whiskey. Believe me. However, the intelligent mind can find a substitute."
The sides of the shaft dropped away, and they were in clear, freezing air, which knifed through Vimes's shirt. They drifted sideways a little, and then Vimes was dropped into knee-deep snow.
"One of the better things about our dwarfs is that they don't often try something new, and they never let go of anything old," said the vampire, hovering over the snow. "You weren't hard to find."
"Where am I?" Vimes looked around at rocks and trees mounded in snow.
"In the mountains, quite a long way, vidishins of the town, Mr. Vimes. Goodbye."
"You're going to leave me here?"
"I'm sorry. You were the one who escaped. I am certainly not here. Me, a vampire, interfering in the affairs of dwarfs? Unthinkable. But let us just say, I like people to have an even chance."
"It's freezing. I haven't even got a coat. What is it you want?"
"You have freedom, Mr. Vimes. Isn't that what everyone wants? Isn't it supposed to give you a lovely warm glow?"
Lady Margalotta disappeared into the snow. Vimes shivered. He hadn't realized how warm it had been underground, or what time it was. There was a very dim light. Was this just after sunset? Was it almost dawn? The flakes were piling up on his damp clothes, driven by the wind. Freedom could get you killed. Shelter, that was essential. The time of day and a precise location were no use to the dead. They always knew what time it was and where they were. He moved away from the open shaft and staggered into the trees, where the snow was less deep. It gave off a light, fainter than a sick beetle, as if snow somehow absorbed it from the air as it fell. Vimes wasn't good at forests. They were things you saw on the horizon. If he'd thought about them at all, he'd imagined a lot of trees, standing like poles, brown at the bottom, bushy and green at the top. Here there were humps and bumps, and dark branches weighted and creaking under the snow. It fell around him with a hiss. Occasionally lumps of the stuff would slide from somewhere above, and there would be another shower of frigid crystals as a branch sprang back. There was a track of sorts, or at least a wider, smoother expanse of snow. Vimes followed it, on the basis that there was no more sensible choice. The warm glow of freedom lasted only so long. Vimes had city eyes. He'd watched coppers develop them. A trainee copper who glanced once at a street was just learning, and if he didn't learn quicker, he'd become highly experienced at dying. One who'd been on the streets for a while paid attention, took in details, noted shadows, saw background and foreground, and the people who were trying not to be in either. Angua looked at streets like that. She worked at it. The long-term coppers, like even Nobby when he was on a good day, glanced once at a street and that was enough, because they'd seen everything. Maybe there were country eyes, forest eyes. Vimes saw trees, mounds, snow, and not much else. The wind was getting up. It began to howl among the trees. Now the snow stung. Trees, branches, snow. Vimes kicked a mound beside the track. Snow slid off dark pine needles. He dropped to his hands and knees and pushed forwards. Ah! It was still cold, and there was some snow on the dead needles, but the weighted branches had spread around the trunk like a tent. He pulled himself in, congratulating himself. It was windless here, and, contrary to all common sense, the blanket of snow above him seemed to make it warmer. It even smelled warm, sort of animal. Three wolves, lying lazily around the trunk of the tree, were watching him with interest. Vimes added metaphorical freezing to the other sort. The animals didn't seem frightened. Wolves. And that was about it. It made as much sense to say snow or wind. Right now those were more certain killers. He'd heard somewhere that wolves wouldn't attack you if you faced them down. The trouble was that he was going to sleep soon. He could feel it creeping over him. He wasn't thinking right, and every muscle ached. Outside the wind moaned, and His Grace the Duke of Ankh fell asleep. He awoke with a snort, and, to his surprise, all his arms and legs as well. A drop of chilled water, melted from the roof just above by the heat of his body, ran down his neck. His muscles didn't hurt any more. He couldn't feel most of them. And the wolves had gone. There was trampled snow at the far end of the makeshift lair, and light so bright that he groaned. It turned out to be daylight, from a bright sky bluer than any Vimes had seen, so blue that it seemed to shade into purple at the zenith. He stepped out into a sugar-frosted world, crunchy and glittering. Wolf tracks led away between the trees. It occurred to Vimes that following them would not be a life-enhancing move. Perhaps last night had been understood as time out, but today was a new day, and probably the search was on for breakfast. The sun felt warm, the air was cold, his breath hung in front of him. There should be people around, shouldn't there? Vimes was hazy on rural issues, but weren't there supposed to be charcoal burners, woodcutters, and, he tried to think, little girls taking goodies to Granny? The stories Vimes had learned as a kid suggested that all forests were full of bustle, activity, and the occasional scream, but this place was silent. He set off in a direction that appeared to head downwards on general principles. Food was the important thing. He'd still got a couple of matches, and he could probably make a fire if he had to be out here another night, but it was a long time since the canapé at the reception. This is Ankh-Morpork trudging over and through the snow. After half an hour he reached the bottom of a shallow valley, where a stream splashed between encroaching banks of ice. It steamed. The water was warm to the touch. He followed the banks for some way. They were crisscrossed with animal tracks. Here and there the water pooled in deep hollows that smelled of rotten eggs. Around them the leafless bushes were heavy with ice where the steam had frozen. Food could wait. Vimes stripped off his clothes and stepped into one of the deeper pools, yelping at the heat, and then lay back. Didn't they do something like this up at No Thing Fjord? He'd heard stories. They had hot, steamy baths, and then ran around in the snow, hitting one another with birch logs, didn't they? Or something. There was nothing really daft that some foreigner wouldn't do somewhere. God, it felt good. Hot water was civilization. Vimes could feel the stiffness in his muscles melting away in the warmth. After a moment or two, he splashed over to the bank and rummaged through his clothes until he found a flattened cigar packet containing a couple of things that, after the events of the past 24 hours, looked like fossilized twigs. He had two matches. Well, the hell with it. Anyone could light a fire with one match. He lay back in the water. That was a good decision. He could feel himself coming back together again, pulled into shape by the heat within and without.
"Ah, Your Grace!"
Wolf von Überwald was sitting on the opposite bank. He was stark naked. A little vapour rose off him, as if he'd just been exerting himself. Muscles gleamed as though they'd been oiled. They probably had been.
"A run in the snow is such a thing, is it not?" said Wolf pleasantly. "You are certainly learning the ways of Überwald, Your Grace. Lady Sibyl is alive and well and free to go back to your city when the passes are cleared. I know you would wish to hear that."
Other figures were approaching through the trees, men and women, all of them as unself-consciously naked as Wolf. Vimes realized he was a dead man bathing. He could see it in Wolf's eyes.
"Nothing like a hot dip before breakfast," he said. "Ah, yes, we also have not as yet breakfasted," said Wolf.
He stood up, stretched, and cleared the pool from a standing start. Vimes's breeches were picked up and examined.
"I threw Inigo's damn thing away," said Vimes. "I don't think a friend put it there." "It is all a great game, Your Grace," said Wolf. "Do not reproach yourself. The strongest survive, which is as it should be." "D planned this, did he?"
Wolf laughed.
"The dear little D, oh, he had a plan. It was a good little plan, although a touch insane. Happily, it will no longer be required."
"You want the dwarfs to go to war?"
"Strength is good," said Wolf,
folding Vimes's clothes neatly.
"But like some other good things, it only remains good if it is not possessed by too many people."
He tossed the clothes as far as he could.
"What is it you want me to say, Your Grace?" Wolf continued. "Something like, 'You are going to die anyway, so I might as well tell you, perhaps?'
"Well, it'd be a help," said Vimes.
"You are going to die anyway,"
Wolf smiled.
"Why don't you tell me?"
Talking gained time. Maybe those woodcutters and charcoal burners would be along at any minute. If they hadn't brought their axes, everyone was going to be in big trouble.
"I'm pretty sure why the replica scone was stolen in Ankh-Morpork," said Vimes. "I've just got the inkling of an idea that a copy was made of it, which was smuggled here on one of our coaches. Diplomats don't get searched."
"Well done.
Shame Igor came to unload when one of your boys was there, wasn't it?"
"Oh, it's hard to hurt, and Igor—"
"You don't care, do you?" said Vimes.
"A bunch of dwarfs want Albrecht on the throat—" "The scone, because they want to hang on to that old-time certainty,
and you just want dwarfs fighting. An old Albrecht wouldn't even get the right scone back.
Let us just say that just now we find our interests converge, shall we?
Said Wolf. Out of the corner of his eye, Vimes saw the other werewolves spreading out around the pool.
And now you set me up, he said. Pretty amateurishly, I'd say, but impressive, because D couldn't have had much time after he thought I was getting close. It would have worked, too. People aren't good eyewitnesses, I know. They believe what they want to see, and what people told them they saw. It was a nice touch giving me that damn one shot. He really must have hoped I'd killed to escape.
Is it not time you got out of that pool? Said Wolfgang.
You mean bath? Said Vimes.
Yes, there was a wince. Vimes registered it. Oh, you're walking upright and talking, my lad, and you look as strong as Nox, but somewhere between a human and a wolf has a bit of dog in them, doesn't it?
We have an ancient custom here, said Wolf, looking away, and it is a good one. Anyone can challenge us. It's a little chase, the great game, a competition, if you like. If they outrun us, they win 400 crowns. That is a very good sum. A man may start a small business with it. Of course, as I can see you realize, if they don't outrun us, the question of the money does not arise.
Does anyone ever win? Said Vimes.
Come on, woodcutters, the people need wood.
Sometimes, if they train well and know the country, many a successful man in Bjonk owes his start in life to our little custom. In your case, we'll give you, oh, an hour's lead for the sport of it.
He pointed.
Bjonk is 5 miles in that direction. The law says that you must not enter a dwelling until you get there.
And if I don't run?
Then it will be a really short event. We do not like Ankh-Morpork. We do not want you here.
That's odd, said Vimes.
Wolf's broad brow wrinkled.
Your meaning?
Oh, it's just that everywhere I go in Ankh-Morpork, I seem to bump into people who come from Oberwald, you see. Dwarfs, trolls, humans, all beavering away quite happily and writing letters home saying, come on, it's great here, they don't eat you alive for a dollar.
Wolf's lip curled, revealing a glint of incisor. Vimes had seen that look on Angua's face. It meant she was having a bad hair day. And a werewolf can have a bad hair day all over. He pushed his luck. It was clearly too weak to move by itself.
Angua's getting on well. Vimes, Mr. Civilized Ankh-Morpork, you will run!
Hoping that his legs would support him, Vimes climbed out on the snow of the bank as slowly as he dared. There was laughter from the werewolves.
You go into the water wearing clothes?
Vimes looked down at his streaming legs.
You've never seen drawers before, he said.
Wolf's lip curled again. He glanced triumphantly at the others.
"Behold civilization," he said.
Vimes puffed life into his cigar and looked around at the frozen woodland with as much hauteur as he could muster.
400 crowns, did you say?
He said.
"Yes."
Vimes sneered at the forest again.
"What is that in Ankh-Morpork dollars? Do you know, about $1.50?"
"The question will not arise,"
Wolf bellowed.
"Well, I don't want to have to spend it all here.
Run!"
"In the circumstances, then, I won't ask you if you've got the money on you."
Vimes walked away from the werewolves, glad that they couldn't see his face, and very much aware that the skin on his back wanted to crawl around to his front. He kept moving calmly, his wet drawers beginning to crackle in the frosty air, until he was certain he was out of sight of the pack.
"So, let's see. They've got better strength than you. They know the country. And if they're as good as Angua, they could track a fart through a skunk's breakfast, and your legs hurt already. So what are the pluses here?"
"Well, you've made Wolf really angry." Vimes broke into a run.
"Not much of a plus there, then, all things considered."
Vimes broke into a faster run. Off in the distance, wolves began to howl.